Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Diego Alfonso, airline transport pilot, designated pilot examiner with over 13,000 hours of dual given from Orlando, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone. My name is Diego Alfonso. I'm with the Florida Aviation Network, broadcasting live and in the clear from the Howard Hughes exhibit in the Florida Air Museum at Sun and Fun. If you just joined us, this year, 2013, marks the 39th consecutive year that this fly-in expo and air show, all rolled into one, has taken place here at Sun and Fun. Also, I want you to know that this is the show, the second in the world in its class. There's only one other show bigger than this. If you haven't been here, you probably don't know what you're missing. If you've been here and you're not here today, you're probably hurting. So stop the hurt and come over. Now, as a host of the show, of course, my job is to interview aviation personalities or an aviation enthusiast. And my next guest happens to fit that role just right. His name is Pat Phillips, and it's an acquaintance of mine. I know him for quite a while. He's from Orlando, and I've been in Orlando for the past 30 years, so it gives me a real great pleasure to welcome Pat to the show. Pat, welcome to the aviation, the Florida Aviation Network.
Thank you, Diego, for that generous introduction.
Okay, Pat, here's the thing. What I like to do is, because I know you have an extensive background in aviation, and I'd like to take you as back as I can, especially to that time when you first decided that you wanted to be a pilot. In other words, the first thought was, yeah, I want to be a pilot. Take us back there.
Okay, well, that's a good question. My grandfather was a pilot, general aviation pilot, back in the 20s and 30s. In fact, I remember my grandfather used to talk about, well, he saw Lincoln Beachy when he actually came to Orlando and flew for the first time. Okay. And my dad was a pilot, World War II pilot, and active in aviation all up to the time he passed away. And I had several uncles that were very involved in aviation. So it was just natural that I would be interested in aviation.
So where were you when you went for your first flight lesson? Tell us about that.
Well, my very first official flight lesson was an Aeronica 7AC at Hoquist Airport in Orlando. Do you remember Hoquist Airport?
No, that's before my time.
It was near the South Orange Blossom Trail. And so I flew the Aeronica Champion out of there till almost solo. And then it was about the time the flight school closed. And then I went to Orlando. It was Orlando Municipal Airport then, right, which is now Orlando Executive Airport. And resumed my flying lessons at Orlando, was called Orlando Aviation then, flying a Cessna 140. And I soloed in the Cessna 140 when I was 16 years old, just a few days after my 16th birthday.
Wow. And then from there, I guess you got your private right there in at Orlando?
Yes, I got my private license at Orlando Executive Airport when I was 17.
And subsequent ratings?
And Bryant Booslog, I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
Bryant.
Of course, BB.
BB, he was the flight examiner.
BB, yeah, who doesn't remember BB?
Yes.
From Orlando? He was an icon.
He was.
In aviation, as far as Orlando is concerned. So, now, my understanding is that you flew also air shows.
Yes.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I've always been interested in aerobatics. I always thought airplanes were supposed to do things other than fly straight and level.
Yep.
So even right after my first solo, I found a pilot. Actually, believe it or not, we went out and did a loop and barrel roll. And it was just something I always liked to do and always enjoyed doing it. So then it evolved into flying air shows for 25 years. I actually fly 6, 8, 10 air shows a year doing low-level aerobatics. I had a unrestricted surface level aerobatic waiver for years.
Bravo. See, and I know you probably for the last, I've known you for the past 25, 26 years, and I never knew that facet. You know, that when I was reviewing my notes there, I see that you were an aerobatic pilot. So, but I, as I was telling you before, I think I flew you some time back. I used to teach an accountant. Actually, he was my accountant too. A fellow by the name of Chuck Newman.
Yes.
In Orlando.
Yes.
And he needed to go somewhere. I believe it was in Georgia or Alabama. And they had a Seneca.
Yes, I recall Chuck Newman very well. In fact, I just saw him recently.
Okay, I haven't seen him in a while. He sold his 182, I understand.
Yes, he did.
But anyway, those are memories. I got good memory, you know.
You sure do. It's amazing.
But now, tell us the transition from aerobatic pilot, general aviation, to military pilot.
Well, actually, I got my private license when I was in high school, got my commercial license while I was at University of Florida, and also had my flight instructor certificate my senior year at University of Florida, and I was doing some flight instructing. Yeah. And I look at it, the Vietnam War had started going right. strong, and it was an opportunity. I had been accepted to law school. I was getting ready to go to law school. And then I found out you could go down to the Air Force recruiter's office, take the test, which I did take them for the Air Force and the Army and the Navy. And I decided I would go fly Air Force and put law school on hold. So fortunately, I passed the test and passed the physical and went to officer training school at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas and graduated after the 90 days and
right.
went to Air Force pilot training at Lackland Air Force Base in Del Rio, Texas. And after I got out of pilot training, I got into the fighter line, but I always knew my goal was to get back to law school. And that was about the time the Air Force had taken the Caribous from the Army. And
I
said, a Caribou? You know, that's got a Pratt & Whitney R2000 engine, a round engine. And when I was at University of Florida, I saw the Army. It's still the most spectacular feat of airmanship to this day I've seen. It landed a Caribou on the ROTC field at University of Florida. And I was first time I'd ever seen a Caribou or heard of one, and so I was intrigued. So naturally, I was going to do anything. I want to fly a Caribou. So I got my choice and went straight to Vietnam and flew the Caribou for 850 combat hours in Vietnam, which was a great flying experience.
It must have been, because that's a short field capable aircraft.
Yes, most of our landings we were using it to its full stall capability. That's the short takeoff and land capabilities.
Unimproved fields.
We were generally flying out of Benoit and Saigon and supplying the Special Forces camps and the outlying forward army camps. And they were all dirt, clay, grass, unimproved runways, most of them around 2,000 feet or less.
Well, that's the total different kind of flying.
It was, but it was kind of back to the flying I was used to. It was like flying around in Florida with the typical weather we have here in Florida and flying, you know, same speed as a Cessna 182 would be flying around.
Exactly. But I think there's another facet that from there you move into jets, I believe.
Yes. Well, after I finished my tour in Vietnam, I moved to fly C-141s. That's the Lockheed Starlift,
yes.
Which is a four-engine jet transport.
That's an impressive plane.
Oh, it was a neat airplane. It was the most advanced airplane at the time.
Yeah. My orthopedic doctor is a former 141 pilot. I don't know if you know him. Christensen. Alan Christensen. He practices at Orlando Orthopedic. And he's a former 141.
I didn't know that.
Yep. 141 pilot. And so you did your aviation career as far as the military, ended as a 141 pilot.
Yes, I flew the C-141. I was upgraded to an aircraft commander, and then I was also a flight instructor in the C-141 and a flight examiner by the time I got off active duty. And then soon as I got off active duty, I went to law school, but I flew the C-141 as a reservist out of Charleston Air Force Base, South Carolina, while I was in law school.
Right. And now, tell us a little bit about your law practice and where did that headed you and how you are practicing law as far as aviation is concerned.
Well, since obviously I've always had an interest in airplanes, I got into law practice and I did the normal things new lawyers did criminal defense, I wanted to be a litigator, so I right. stayed into the litigation area, but also learned how to do real estate and a lot of areas in law practice. In other words, you might call it a general practice,
right.
but always looking for things in the aviation area where now I'm representing pilots and mechanics, flight attendants, flight schools that have issues with the FAA.
Like me.
like you used to be.
I think we had a couple phone calls.
Oh, we sure did.
On the opposite side of the fence.
Oh, we
you
sure
know,
did.
Life is amazing, you know. I mean,
that's we were both professional.
Oh, listen. There's no doubt about it, and that's the beauty of the system.
Yes,
and that is the beauty of the system. If that disappears, we're in trouble.
Yes, we are.
And I look back at every time that we talked with the utmost respect, and with one goal in mind: fairness.
That's
the right thing, justice, and doing the right thing. And I think
that's right.
you're an example of that, and you represent well. And but anyway, now tell us what's in the future. What's Pat Phillips thinking of doing, or what are you involved in right now?
Well, I'm still actively engaged in law practice, but I'm also very engaged in Sun and Fun.
Okay.
And I'm
I understand there is something in the works there that. Why don't you just go ahead and tell us? You know what I'm talking about.
But I'm a director of the Sun and Fun Fly-In Inc. I've been
right.
a director for many years, and also a corporate officer, a secretary, and I'm also on the Florida Air Museum board.
Okay.
So I'm on both boards, and also I flew in the air show. I started flying the air show here at Sun and Fun, doing aerobatics to my steerman, starting back in the late '80s, and then acquired the job as the air show chairman. And I was the air show chairman, the air show coordinator for 15 years of the air show here in Sun and Fun.
Yes, that's a high mark. That is definitely a high mark. And you're also involved somehow with the, if my notes are correct, with the Wright brothers.
That's right. I'm going to receive an honor from the great honor from the FAA, and I think people in the airplane community receiving the Wright brothers. Wright Brothers Award.
That's correct. And that is something that, you know, you are now in a group, in a very, very, very limited group of people in the world that are able to say that they have received that award.
Well, I guess I think back on it, I do feel honored. I also feel fortunate. That means we flew more than 50 years accident free and violation free, so that's fortunate.
That says a lot. I'm working. I have, according to my numbers, I got 6 years to go to hit the 50 mark. I have kept my record clean. There is no accidents or violations. There's two incidents that were not my fault,
mm-hmm.
not my doing. And I got the blessing from the FAA. One was a nose gear that wouldn't extend, and the other was an engine failure in a 172. Doing a check ride, by the way, an instrument check ride,
mm-hmm.
Right here in Sanford, Florida. Now, do you have any war stories that you would like to kind of share with us, whether as a GA pilot, as an aerobatic pilot, or as a military pilot, or anything? I'll tell you, I like war stories. I really do, and I like to listen to them, and you know, our audience, they're pilots, and they like to hear that too. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you have anything that you can think of that, number one, as a war story, and number two, that carries a message, especially a safety message, you know, because that's what it's all about.
Well, that's when I think about it as 50 years of flying accident-free, violation-free, is you do have to think safety, you have to think reasonable, you just can't let your instincts that want to lead you to do something that might be stupid, do it. And safe, which that all comes down to safety. I think as long as you keep that in mind, you're going to be good. I found out even during combat, 850 hours of combat hours in the Caribou. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think that way, you can think ahead and you can avoid the accidents, the problems, the issues, whether you're in combat or flying as a civilian. You just think ahead a little bit, and I always think, even as a flight instructor, these things are avoidable if you think about them.
Correct. Now, during your aerobatic career, do you have any war stories, anything that got your attention during those days?
Well, yeah, in fact, I guess I don't talk about it too much, but since Diego asked, I guess one of my early air shows here at Sun and Fun in my steerman.
And the feds are not listening, so.
No, that's okay. But I would do, it was a stock steerman, Continental 220, no inverted fuel system, and I'd always start out by doing a loop, and I'd do two slow rolls, real slow rolls.
Right.
And the engine quits when you get inverted. And then it restarts, and then I'd go do the second slow roll, and that's do that because most people, know the steerman won't run inverted. Well, what happened here is after I finished the first roll, the engine didn't start, but I'm all anxious to get the second one done the way I've always done. Well, the engine never restarted, so I literally did that second roll, engine out, and it got around, it got dished out, and it got just about right down on the surface when it first started cranking and started running, and here came trees and obstacles, and it got up over them and got going. So that one, you asked about something to get your attention, that got my attention. So after that, I made sure on my checklist when I finish that first roll, engine running, then second roll.
That's right. So you don't get caught behind the A.
Yeah.
Behind the A ball.
And I'm lucky if I hadn't had an extra 50 feet, it wouldn't have been around.
I'll tell you, one of the books that I recommend every pilot to read, now that you said that, when it talks about luck, and it's a book called Fate is the Hunter.
Yes.
It's by Ernest Gann.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, I read that book, and that's what it's all about. He says why things happen to some people and they don't happen to others. But I really think I was telling, I had a guest yesterday here, Lori Brentman from the Academy here in Sun and Fun. And I was telling her, since you brought up the safety issue, that in my book, I do a lot of seminars. I do a lot of safety seminars throughout the state. And I came down to... actually, I'm making this my motto now. There are two options in safety, in aviation safety. One of them is you can be part of safety. And the other one is safety must be a part of you.
Yes.
And therein lies the difference between dedication and commitment. And as pilots, you and I know that we cannot be dedicated to safety. We have to be committed to safety.
Yes, well, then you have to live it.
Of course. Of course. Because once you're up there, you're on your own. You're on, and especially the background that you have on flying missions, more so. Because once you leave that nest, you're on your own. And there's people out there that want to hurt you.
Yes.
It's not like here, like you go from point A to point B, and nobody's trying to shoot you down. So that's something that, we'll have to work on you. Now, any other war stories? Any other areas that you would like to address?
Well, there again, I think, safety is important, and you think ahead. And that story I just told you, what I learned is I should have thought, what if the engine didn't start on the second round? I just took it for granted, and that's just one of those lessons you always remember. And again, it goes back to safety is planning, learning. You've got to understand the airplane, your equipment, the weather, the mechanics, the environment, everything that involves you in that airplane.
Now, I'm a big promoter of aviation safety and aviation as a rule, aviation as a general. I want people to become pilots. I want to keep the file full. If your grandson comes up to you and says, I want to learn how to fly, what would you tell them? Based on your experience, based on your background, what would be your advice?
Well, I've had that even sons and grandsons, something they've got to want to do. It's nothing that I'm going to say, hey, here's an airplane, here's a flight instructor, you're going to learn to fly. They've got to want to do it from the heart, from the inside, and that's what makes a good pilot. Plus, I want them to have an understanding and appreciation of the mechanics of the airplane. I got my A&P license, and there again, I think it's just an added safety factor because you understand the mechanics of the airframe and the engine.
I'm a mechanic too, you know.
Yes.
And I was, and the people I had here before, the mechanic for the team, for the Windwalkers, he's a pilot with United. He flies 767s, and he's also a mechanic. And we were talking about the fact that if you're a pilot and a mechanic, let me go back a bit. If you're just a pilot, you have to wait for something to happen.
Yes.
And then realize what it is, then you put your decision-making in process and then try to fix it.
Yes.
Whereas a mechanic, you kind of anticipate because there are airplanes talk, engines talk.
Yes.
But only mechanics know the language.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And so you're sitting there and you say, I didn't like this. Mm-hmm. So before something really happens, you are aware of the fact that it is happening.
That's right, and you can start thinking ahead. You can avoid the problem.
The case in point was when I had that engine failure, the oil pressure, the things I always check, of course, we all check the oil pressure, and we were doing an ILS on the power, I checked the oil pressure, and I want to see I want to see numbers. I don't want to see the green. I want to see numbers. So we were doing about 80 pounds. We're now on the downwind, and I see now we're down to about 65, 70. That's a dramatic drop. So something told me that right there I call approach, and I said, hey, I saw something I don't like. Engine's running, everything looks good, but I may have a problem here. I just want you to know. So the guy says, well, you have, if you want to go to an airport, you have Umatilla and you have Orlando Country. And finally, I decided to go and land on a racetrack. Pat. Unfortunately, we have reached that point in the interview where we're going to have to say goodbye. And I guess time goes fast when we're having fun.
It does, Dago. Well, thank you very much for having me here today.
Thank you very much, and we'll be seeing you in Orlando.
We will be seeing you.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.